Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
At Community Bank, we're here for every part of your financial journey. From personal banking to growing your business or buying a home, our expert guidance makes it simple. We're more than a bank. We're your partner for life's biggest moments. Community Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
It's a great time to live in Mississippi, and we're talking about it. Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. Hope you're having a great day as we continue to celebrate all the amazing people working so hard to make Mississippi such a great place to live, work, and play. Hey, we'll get to our guests in a second. Just share one quick thing. I was reading this morning a story that said that the number of people who will be traveling over the next week, you know, 4th of July week, is projected to be the most number of people in history. So if you're out there on the roads or flying, just be patient. Expect that it's going to be busy. We are actually traveling. My entire family is traveling. And I'm not looking forward to it. We had to get up really, really early, and we're going to get back really, really late when we return. But we built in some buffer zones, some nice layovers, and hopefully we'll not have any big issues to deal with. So hope that you will travel safely as you get into your travel plans for the 4th of July week. Listen, I always enjoy my conversations with Sid Salter. We don't visit enough. He's the Vice President of Strategic Communications and the Director of Public Affairs at Mississippi State University, but he's got a long, incredible career in media, and I always enjoy just chatting with him in general. Sid, how you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ricky. I'm like John Travolta. I'm just staying alive, you know.
Well, look, you know, it's interesting, and we'll get into all this before we get too far into the conversation. The work, the job of a president of a university, in this case, Mississippi State University, is you sort of contemplate what he has to do, in this case, you got to be a jack of all trades, and you're there usually right by his side during a lot of his work. And we'll get into all that here shortly. But listen, when I was sort of preparing for the show, it's easy to forget actually that you had Burkitt lymphoma, which is you were stage four. You went through this incredible treatment. And you came out on the other side of it. I'm assuming you're doing well because you seem to be keeping the pace.
Oh, I'm in May. I was 7 years in the clear, really blessed. My family, my friends, certainly the university, and my boss, Mark Keenum, were behind me, helping me fight that fight. But I mean, yeah, you don't go through that without going through some changes and some learning some lessons and the biggest thing is that I appreciate my life more now than I did before going through that experience, and I find myself sought out by people who are fighting the fight and going through it, and I try to always spend time with them, talk with them, try to put them at ease and do for them what so many did for me. But thanks for asking. I'm good.
Well, listen, you and I have not chatted about this so specifically, but the whole notion of you appreciate your life more. I was a paramedic early in my life and saw a lot of death and dying. Found my own father dead when I was 21 years old. And more recently, in the last few years, had to do CPR on one of my grandchildren. And when you go through that scenario, I often say that, you know, you get these reminders in life that help you. Listen, if we hear the reminder, some people go through these life-changing experiences and they don't hear the reminder of how precious life really is and how we should live in the moment. We can't change a darn thing about yesterday. We really can't worry too much about tomorrow. The one thing we can really be sure about is this moment and what we do in this moment. And I've had the opportunity, man, too many times in my life. Thank God I'm here and healthy, and my family is still around me. But I haven't gone through the specific experience that you went through. But, you know, again, we get these reminders in life why it is important for us to live in the moment. And for people who haven't been dealt these blows, it's still an important lesson for them to hear. And you certainly got that reminder yourself, didn't you?
I did. And, you know, I think about in your life, Ricky, when you were leading the Sun-Herald, you went through the aftermath of Katrina with your community and saw, you know, I was down there soon after the wind stopped blowing. And I mean, it was utter devastation and loss and uncertainty and all those things. And, you know, you were a leader during that. And, you know, honestly, dread disease and physical struggles are very much like the aftermath of a major storm. Storms come in life. They may be just your storm, or you may be part of a large storm that affects the community. But all of us do, thankfully, learn from it, benefit from it, although sometimes it's difficult to find the benefit. But, you know, you've been down that path, and it's very rewarding to feel like on the backside of it, you can help people. And so that's what I try to do.
I think what I love about the opportunity to be able to do this show, and I talk about it a lot, whether it be on this show or the outdoor show that I have on Monday, is this notion of having independence, you know, the ability to be an independent voice. And listen, I've written about it. You've written about it. I spent a career focused on it, but this, you know, the whole notion of the public trust and the role that we have to sort of protect it. You know, you taught there at Mississippi State around media and the role media plays in society today. But I feel fortunate that I'm in the position I'm in today, that I'm in a position where I can speak loudly on issues that I'm passionate about, that I can have these longer conversations with people like you, as I often say, to understand the essence of who people are. And these are not soundbite discussions. These are long form opportunities to really dive into what people are thinking about. I'm fortunate to be in a position where I can really do that. And I don't take anything for granted. I try to live by example and everything that I do. I know that I'm not always successful in that regard, but Sid, as we get older, it's more important to me now than it ever was before. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't look any farther than my grandchildren to see why that's true. I am concerned about their future, and I'm concerned about their opportunities. And these students that I get to rub elbows with every day on our campus, it's all out there ahead of them. And so it's incumbent on us to do everything we can to make sure that our students get a high quality education that will in turn enable them to live the life that they want to live, and to be able to elevate the circumstances of their families. So absolutely. Absolutely.
Listen, we'll get to Mississippi State in a second, because we've got the whole show together. But while we're on media, just for a second, you know, the changing media landscape, we've watched what's happened as the digital tsunami has kind of hit really all media. People tend to think about the newspaper industry, but it's really hit all of them. It's hit the newspaper industry harder, obviously, because the advertising model that supported our abilities at newspapers to protect the First Amendment, the advertising model was literally obliterated. And for those companies that didn't embrace digital, they really have some big challenges ahead for themselves. And I was looking the other day at the number of newspapers, the thousands of newspapers that have closed across the United States. It's a troubling situation. Why it's important to me as it relates to newspapers specifically is that, as I was having a conversation with someone recently, I reminded them that before all of this happened, that newspapers had more resources than all other media combined in every local market in the United States. And that no longer is the case. We don't have enough focus on the public trust these days like we used to, and there's no way to fix that, unfortunately. It's just the reality of the situation. How often do you think about that?
Often, and it goes back to a number. The day I walked into the Clarion-Ledger to start that phase of my career, there were 525 full-time employees at that operation on Pearl Street in Jackson. Now there are about 30, and it's just a different environment. I think about my friend Wyatt Emmerich, how brave he is to operate community newspapers at a high level and at a profitable level, but it is a constant struggle. And so, yeah, I think a lot about it. Miss my friends, but it's just a hill that's at this point almost impossible to climb.
It is. It is very impossible. We'll kind of pick it up from there when we get on the other side as we continue our conversation with Sid Salter. We'll see you after this break.
And love for Mississippi is why he's here. This is the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. I have my friend Sid Salter with us today. He's the Vice President of Strategic Communications and Director of Public Affairs at Mississippi State University. And we'll get the latest from Mississippi State here in just a second. But we're just talking about the changing media landscape. So in terms of creating accountability, the watchdog role that was so important that all of us played in the local markets, politics at the end of the day, it's a very local thing and it evolves from there. But we don't have the kind of watchdogging that was there, and nor will we ever have it again, unfortunately, just the reality of the situation. Simultaneous to that, you had this escalation of literally proliferation of smart devices, smartphones. It's always important to remind people that the smartphone was not even introduced until 2007. That's really kind of hard to, that's 2 years after Hurricane Katrina, said, to think about it in those terms.
Right.
And then what it's done today to put a phone in everyone's hand to be a reporter, and then social media, and then the algorithms that go with that, and that they make money when there's engagement. Engagement usually happens around negative news, so our news feeds tend to be filled with things that will engage us, that pits us against one another. It polarizes the world, not just the United States. And there's almost no way to put that genie back in the bottle again. It's really going to take phenomenal leadership to get us over where we are today. I mean, I personally don't see the light at the end of the tunnel as it relates to that.
I really don't either. And, it's kind of the Wild Wild West out there now in terms of how people get their information and the reliability and validity of the information that they're receiving. And social media has become an area where, it's kind of like your parents teach you when you're a child, when you go out into the yard, be careful where you put your hands and feet because you may well get hurt. Manipulation, misinformation, disinformation, and the fact that you have, and I don't say this as a criticism of anyone, but you have low information voters, low information citizens, they're they're not getting a balanced diet of information. They've got a couple of sources that they trust and that they're comfortable with, and they're getting designer news. They're getting news they want to receive and hear. They're not receiving news from other sources. And so that lack of balance, kind of feeds the beast of mistrust and distrust. You know, politics at the congressional level and even at the legislative level in Mississippi, people would argue passionately about different viewpoints. But at the end of the day, they realized that they had a duty to govern, they had a duty to serve, and that at the end of the day, they all work for the same people. We really don't have that now, particularly at the congressional level. It's not a matter of winning the argument. It's a kind of a matter of, burning the other guy's house down. And so that's not good for the country. It's not good for the state. And that's probably the most disappointing thing about the devolution of traditional news coverage, is that the goal of government has increasingly ceased to be to govern. And so that's, Ricky, when you start talking like that, it's a sure signal that your hair is gray or absent. And,
Hey, one quick comment about that, and then I want to share a quick observation about our new Speaker of the House here in Mississippi in a conversation we had recently. But listen, I remember these stats so well. When I was at the Sun-Herald, we would do at least every other year, we'd do readership studies. And so the Sun-Herald had a circulation of over 50,000 copies a day. We knew that given the day, 2.3 to 2.6 people per paper would read the paper. Because you think about it, it goes into a household, and you get the husband and wife and maybe some other members of the family that were there in a typical scenario. So you had about 130,000 readers on any given day. That's hard to even get my head around. And you listen, there's always going to be bias in news. even when we were working so hard to keep bias out, bias was going to be there because people, human beings, were putting the report together. But because we had layers of editors, we had so many layers, we were working really hard to create as unbiased a report as we could and as balanced a report as we could. So people would be reading things they didn't like to see and reading some things they liked to see. And we worked hard to put opinions on the editorial pages. Okay, under that scenario, even then, the normal reading level of people who read the newspaper was eighth grade. That always fascinated me. Okay, so we don't have that level of readership happening anymore, and they're getting their news from some social media. They can find their tribes easily, as you just pointed out. They want to join in with people who they agree with. They can find that pretty quickly, and so the balance isn't there anymore. This ability to say, okay, you may not want to hear it, but we want you to hear both sides of the argument. Then the way democracy works, we're going to give this information to you. Then you can decide where you want to stand on that. We're missing that entire step now. And I don't know how to get it back. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. Just, you have anything you want to say about that?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Unfortunately, that's the way of the world.
And you spent a career writing about this, but I just want to convey a conversation that Speaker White and I had, Jason White, the new Speaker of the House, and I had recently. It was him coming from Kosciuszko and then living in West Mississippi, a town of about 250 people. It has a way. And of course he's been a city lawyer. He's been a judge. He's been a small town lawyer. When you have to operate in that kind of a world, it changes your perspective, which is when he came, he had no offense to any prior leaders, but he was going to do things a little bit more differently. And of course, we had some important debates about Medicaid expansion and all that. I'm not trying to cue you up on any of that. But the point I wanted to make was that for so long, the national political situation would not actually get templated on top of Mississippi. I mean, for many years, we didn't have to, we would still have our political disagreements around policy and all those kinds of things. But the reality was the national sort of politics played out the way it was going to play out. And then in Mississippi, we kind of did the Mississippi thing, whatever that might be. These days, the national politics tends to get templated on Mississippi in a way that makes it look like we're disagreeing on everything. When in reality, if you look at the bills that are passed, many of them are very bipartisan in Mississippi. So it's like this dichotomy exists that the polarization seems to be what everybody wants you to think is happening in Jackson. And certainly that may be the case with certain big issues. But in reality, we do a pretty decent job of working together still. And it's a kind of an ironic situation, isn't it?
It is. And I think the last session, despite the divide on Medicaid expansion, I think this last session was one of the more progressive sessions in terms of governing and getting things done. I've been excited to get to know Speaker White. I think as much as anybody who's been in a position of power, he has that desire to govern and to work both sides of the aisle as he can. I think Delbert Hoseman in the 2 years prior to that did the same thing, particularly on the Medicaid issue. So I think we've got leadership in both houses now that are at the very least willing to listen to the other side and give them a fair hearing. And I think that's the confluence of being able to govern and to lead the people of Mississippi toward the place where they can decide what they want, what they can pay for, what they want to pay for in terms of government.
I think you agree. I agree with what you're saying completely. You know, Jason White said that it's hard to hate somebody you know. I just think, you know, before he was elected speaker, he was invited by the Democrat caucus to come speak to them, and he did. He went to spend some time with them. But he believes you got to be able to, you got to cross the aisle. You got to get to know the people you work with. And in fact, Haley Barbour was on recently and said the biggest issue in Congress today is that, you know, these guys, they don't live there anymore. They go to Congress and then they go home and they're not spending time with each other. And he relayed when he worked in the Reagan White House, the way that Tip O'Neill and Reagan used to get together and have a glass of whatever their preference was at the end of the day. We need to, you know, relationships still really important. We have too many people wanting to be famous and not really wanting to make governing happen in a positive way or solve problems. But I love what Jason White is trying to accomplish. I think, you know, he and the lieutenant governor can achieve some big goals if they stay focused on that and work together. Hey, when we come back on the other side with Sid Salter, we'll find out the latest at Mississippi State University. We'll see you after this.
Reminding you why we all love living in this great state of Mississippi. It's the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. I always enjoy having conversations with someone like Sid Salter as we talk a little shop from our past experience working in newspapers and understanding the First Amendment obligation and what all that stands for. So I hope you get something from these conversations. As I was telling during the break, you know, I think there's the role of accountability, creating accountability, the role of the watchdog. The role of, you know, maintaining independence and objectivity, that's more important today than it's ever been before. And I don't want to suggest that it's completely absent, because that's not true. It's not completely absent. So let's shift gears. You know, one of the things I did, and I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I started listing out responsibilities that a university president has. And you could write a book about it because you're in the trenches with the president of Mississippi State University on a regular basis. But I'm going to list a few things. The have to worry about academic success, whether it be developing the faculty or research initiatives or whatever that might be. You got to worry about enrollment and student successes. I mean, you got to recruit and retain students. You want them to be successful, and you want them to be ready when they leave the university. The financial side of this, whether it's securing funding sources, whether it's the budget side of things, all the strategic decisions have to be made, things that you're doing today and how it's going to affect the university years down the road. Campus culture and diversity. I mean, the notion of fostering this opportunity that students have a voice and faculty has a voice and staff has a voice, and that's all important. Community engagement. I think about, man, that could take all your time, thinking about connecting with the community and donors and alumni and other stakeholders. There's so many, including the IHL. And then I would add to, I mean, that list goes on. I've got lots of subtexts underneath each of those. But I'd also add to that the realities of the NIL and changes on the college, you know, sports side of things. That could suck the president of the university into a vortex. But, you know, I probably have only just begun to scratch the surface, Sid, listing out this diverse responsibilities the president has. And you're there with a front row seat observing it. I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, we have and it starts with Mark Keenum. We have outstanding leadership. I would argue that through the history of the institution, Mark is and has been a transformational leader. He's discussed in the same conversations with Don Zacharias and with the struggles that faced our founding President Stephen D. Lee, but the tenure that President Keenum has enjoyed here has been a phenomenal one in terms of growth and expansion of the university, of programs, of facilities, of athletics, and so he has done a transformational job. He's brought in excellent people around the table with him to do this work, and all of those people, including a world-class faculty, deserve credit for it. And we have outstanding students. And so that laundry list you went down is absolutely spot on. The challenges we face right now, how is higher education funded? It's funded through appropriation at the state level. It's funded through attracting research dollars, and it's funded through tuition. The challenge is, Ricky, when you and I were in college, the state of Mississippi was bearing a higher percentage through appropriation of the cost of attendance than it is today, although the total dollars, have risen as well. But the burden of tuition is often misunderstood. Tuition is high, and I'm helping grandson go to school right now. I understand the challenges to families. The argument that gets lost in the shuffle is that comparing tuition at a state's leading research university across the region and across the country, Mississippi universities, particularly Mississippi State University, is still a bargain compared to institutions in surrounding states. And you mentioned student success. There is no higher priority for us than training our students where they can get the skills to make them competitive in the marketplace for jobs and to do the jobs and have the careers that they want to have. And what we have found is that Mississippi State graduates, and, arguably we have a lot of engineers graduating here, but on average, Mississippi State students earn higher salaries than students from any other institution. And we're proud of that. But we also want the students to leave here with integrity, with values, with courage, and with confidence. And so all of that goes into the mix. Nobody comes to us anymore, Ricky, and says, you know, I'm fine with my kid living in a 40-year-old residence hall without nice amenities. They want good facilities for their children, and why wouldn't they? And so we've got that. There's an enrollment cliff nationwide. There are because of changes in demographics and population numbers, there are fewer students for us to recruit and attract. So the competition, particularly for the best students, is intense. It's intense in-state. It's intense out-of-state. And so you mentioned athletics, NIL, the portal, all of those things have fundamentally changed the face of college athletics. And at the same time, we have to operate a credible competitive program, but still not take our eyes off of job one, which is the academic component and the experience that our students have while they're here. They get a chance to be part of SEC football, basketball, baseball, et cetera. They get a chance to live in a great town with good restaurants and places to enjoy being with their families when they visit and to enjoy being with each other. Our COVID kids lost that. They lost the ability to be with each other, and they're beginning to rediscover it now, and that has been a joy to watch, and we've tried to do everything that we can to facilitate that. But yeah, it's a challenge, but it's one that I am absolutely stoked to be a part of, because as I say, the time I get to spend with these kids really is like the fountain of youth. It's hard to be old and stodgy when you are listening to and seeing the world through their eyes.
Listen, Sid, I think I met Mark Keenum many, many years ago, but I have not discussed, I have not talked to him in a very long time. If I don't know that I've ever had any substantive discussion with him other than in, you know, a community event or something like that. Well, but I've watched him closely.
Let's see if we can.
But here's the interesting thing. I've watched him very closely, and I agree with you that he is a transformational leader. What I notice about him is that he seems to have boundless energy, and if he doesn't have boundless energy, he certainly does a great job of expressing that through the photos that I see, and he's just everywhere.
Well, he is definitely, I think, in terms of college leaders, he's the hardest working man in the business. He does maintain that schedule, and I can tell you, as one who is at his elbow occasionally, it is a grinding schedule that he maintains, one of travel, and he can be his time can be spoken for every waking hour of all 7 days a week, and it is a load. But this was his dream job. He said it when he came here in 2009. It continues to be his dream job, and he approaches it that way. So it's very difficult for the rest of us who work with him not to catch that enthusiasm from him, because he exudes that every day.
Well, it's clear, and we're coming to the end of this segment. We'll pick it up on the other side, but it's clear that you can have the energy, you can have the vision, you can have the intellectual capacity, you can do all those things. But if you can't build a strong team around you in an organization like Mississippi State University, you're still toast, because you got to work through your vice presidents and your associate vice presidents and all that to get it done. He seems to be a good leader in that respect. So when we get back on the other side, we'll actually chat a bit about that as we continue our conversation with Sid Salter. We'll see you after this.
now, back to more of the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. Thank you so much for joining us today as we continue our conversation with Sid Salter from Mississippi State. When we went to break there, we're talking about President Mark Keenum, and this, you know, he's kind of the Energizer Bunny. He never stops. And I was mentioning before I went to break that you can have all these incredible qualities, but if you can't build a strong team, ultimately at a university, you're going to be toast. And as I look through your X post, formerly Twitter post, and look at the quality of over a long period of time, the quality of the team members that he brings on board, it's clear that he spends a lot of time focusing on getting people who are going to join this university who can be innovative but also a good fit, who share his passion for the university. He seems to have hit home runs in that regard.
Well, he has built a strong and effective team. He has the quality that all good leaders have. He empowers those who work with him and gets them the resources they need, and then holds them accountable. And that that mode of operation is successful. You mentioned over the break Phi Theta Kappa and our relationship with the state's two-year institutions. We have extremely strong partnerships with Mississippi's community colleges, none more so than Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College, President Mary Graham there. Our Engineering on the Coast programs are so important to the future of the institution, and I would argue to the future of many Gulf Coast industries who need the availability of homegrown training and education for the engineers that they will employ. So Chevron, Ingalls, so many others, VT Halter down on the Gulf Coast, and our relationship with Keesler and with Gulf Coast through the Mississippi Cyber Initiative. All of those programs are offshoots of having a strong basic relationship, transfer relationship with these two-year colleges. We do it with Jones College through poultry science and other programs. And throughout the state, we have been able to capitalize on relationships with these strong community colleges and easing the process of these students transferring to join us. Another very innovative program, and Ricky, when you start looking at the future of the state, one of the things that's going to be an increase, it's already a problem, will be increasingly a problem as baby boomers approach end of life. We're going to have a lot of medical care. There's a shortage of doctors, nurses, technicians, you name it, in the healthcare industry. We have retooled and expanded MSU Meridian into being a hub of healthcare education and training, which will help address that. The master's in nursing program there is really innovative and has the potential to be a game changer for both nursing and more generally health sciences in the state. So our relationship with other institutions is vital to our growth. It's also vital to the growth of the state.
Listen, there's so much we could explore, and we probably should get together again soon, more sooner than later. One of the stats that you're speaking of, first of all, the community college system, Mississippi is one of the strongest in the entire United States. And then you look at Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College and see how various programs fare when compared to other programs around the United States. It's such a great program. I'm a big fan of Mary Graham's, the president there. When you think about the strategic relationship that she has with her stakeholders, and you mentioned Chevron and Ingalls and others, but think about the blue chip industries that are part of Stennis. Good Lord. Over 50% of students at Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College now are not in traditional education anymore. They're in these very specialized kind of two-year training programs. And that actually increases the need for you guys to really connect well, so that, as you point out, the students, there's going to be big time competition for the students that are leaving programs like Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. You've got to perform well, don't you?
We absolutely do. And with some of these larger economic development projects, the rolled aluminum and rolled steel operations here in Northeast Mississippi, we're launching new majors. We've got a metallurgy major coming out strictly to benefit that. But so many of these jobs are not necessarily going to require a four-year degree. Many of them will require certificates or other certifications that will help them go to work. And some of these jobs will, the rolled steel, rolled aluminum jobs will pay close to $100,000 a year. So we can empower our citizens. We can give people who want to get certified in doing this great futures if we work together.
Yeah, what Joe Max Higgins has done up there in the Golden Triangle area, whoo, man, it's super impressive. And it's about strategic focus. It's about saying, okay, what are the needs in the workforce, and how can we apply? Whether you're a two-year university or a four-year university, the challenge is the same. And you guys have worked hard to meet that need. Listen, Sid, we've only just scratched the surface. I can't wait to have you back on again soon, my friend.
Well, we'll try to get Mark Keenum lined up to come and visit with you. That's a conversation you'll enjoy.
Yeah, we'll do that. Well, I'd love to have him on. We'll do that for sure. This has been Sid Salter. Listen, have a great day, and we will see you tomorrow.
Take care.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.